5-4-3. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Well, some people believe that big government is great. Other people believe that big government hurts. In fact, many women in this country feel that big government is not doing enough for them. In fact, creating more problems than need be. And joining us, my guest this week is Carrie Lucas, the president of the Independent Women's Forum. We'll be talking about the impact that big government programs has and how it negatively affects women in this country. Carrie, nice to have you with us.
So much for having me on.
Most people would think, what are you talking about? I mean, government is throwing all the resources in the world to help women. So how can you say that big government is not in women's corner? How is it affecting women negatively?
Yeah, you know, it certainly sounds, the rhetoric around some of these programs sounds so positive and pro-woman. But as so often, you know, when it comes to government policies, the intended effect is often not the actual effect. And when it comes to these pro-woman policies, often what it does is it creates an expectation that women are going to be less engaged workers than men. It sets up a set of expectations and then a set of actualities. You know, you mentioned I'm the president of the Independent Women's Forum, which is a small organization. We've got about 25 workers, and overwhelmingly there are women who work for me. And that means that, you know, in reality, a lot of women end up taking time off from work. This is something that we've kind of, you know, we're very committed to and that we've kind of built into the our employment model. But it does, you know, it affects people. When people leave the office, it impacts the business, it impacts their bottom line. And what often happens is bosses end up saying, you know, gosh, do I really want a worker who's going to disappear for a certain amount of time? And when you start having government mandate those things, and often, you know, when you look at what happens in Europe, it can be months and months of time that women are given off from work after having a baby. That can set up the expectation that, you know, we're not going to give a woman that management job. We're not going to hire her for that that really critical new project. And it can depress women's earnings. It's, you know, it's an uncomfortable truth, but the data certainly backs it up.
Yes, it sounds like a double-edged sword. In fact, as you were talking about maternity leave, I've heard women in my own neighborhood talk about, well, they're giving me so much time. But as you said, I think people don't take a step back and look at, well, the organization relies on that individual. If that individual's not there for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, whatever it may be, you've got to fill that void. And then that creates a problem. Do you bring somebody else on? Will there be tensions? A lot that leaves to be desired. But you know, one question I had for you, there's been a lot of movements lately. In fact, the Me Too movement, for example, and there's no question about it. There should be no tolerance of violence against women. But when a grassroots movement like that gets going, does that hurt you guys? I mean, does that hurt the average woman? Because they're taking up, they're getting all the media attention. Obviously, Congress or even state legislatures, you know, don't want this thing to get overblown. So they start to enact certain legislation or they start to make moves. The point I'm getting at is there a rush to judgment sometimes when these, you know, bootstrapping organizations get together and they make a lot of noise and the media is focusing on that one issue?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't know that there's hard data. The Me Too movement is recent enough that I think that we don't have enough hard data to really be able to assess the its impact. You know, if you look at how sexual harassment laws, just the impact that you'll hear anecdotally, you know, some of the decisions that companies started having, well, you know, we're not going to have closed door meetings with women anymore. I actually remember when I worked in Capitol Hill, you heard of a lot of bosses that said they wouldn't be alone in a car with a woman.
Right.
You know, when Mike Pence has a similar policy, and a lot of people said, "Ah, that's terrible." But then we saw when the Me Too thing blew up, everybody said, "You know what? Maybe, you know, he's right." Because obviously, obviously, men shouldn't be doing things, but they also don't want to open themselves up to the potential that they're going to be accused of doing something rightly or wrongly. But when you do have these policies, when men feel like they're walking on eggshells, it does have the potential to lock women out of opportunities to move up and to advance. You know, and I think it is important that this isn't just This isn't just anecdotal. It's a really interesting study. You know, I did this video with Prager University where I reviewed a lot of the data on the impact in Europe. But actually, a really interesting report was released just this month, and this is on the program that is in California. And a lot of people have said, oh, this is a great program. We should use this as a model for the rest of the country. California offers women who have a baby can opt to get state paid time off from work. You know, obviously, this is particularly, the hope was that this would be particularly helpful to women with lower incomes who don't or are less likely to have paid time off from work for through their employers.
Right.
But the National Bureau of Economic Research just came out and looked at what the impact of this study since 2004. And what they found is that this paid leave program, I'm actually quoting here, the paid leave is associated with a statistically significant short-run decrease in employment of 2.1 percentage points and a long-run decrease of 4.1 percentage points. And, you know, and actually, overall, they found that the moms who took advantage of this paid leave were on average earning 8% less over the decade. So, in fact, this program has very well intended, undoubtedly, but this has led to women them earning less and having less opportunity. And that doesn't even this one doesn't even note those figures don't even note that these everyone has also been paying a tax to support that program. So they're getting less on the in wages, but they're also having more taken out of every single paycheck because of the payroll tax that is being levied to support this program. It really should caution us on making this a federal policy.
You know, as you focused on this topic, obviously, you know, you've uncovered the fact that if government, let's start with the federal government, is going to enact certain legislation similar to what they're doing in California, somebody has to pay for it. So there's the tax implication, but more importantly, this creates a bigger and larger bureaucracy. And we know that no one's going to deny the fact that too much government or too much in the way of laws can really create havoc. So with that said, let me ask you: Is government overreacting by putting all this legislation together? And as you said, I mean, well intended, but in the end, nobody wins.
Yeah, well, absolutely. When I look at the proposals that are out there, especially what's been coming from Senator Gillibrand has often brought up this idea of creating a whole big federal entitlement program so that every man and woman would have the right to take 8 weeks of paid leave off for the birth of a baby, a major illness, the illness of a loved one. And I think it's really concerning. It would be an incredibly large program, require a new bureaucracy, require a large new payroll tax. But one of the big things that I think people miss is it would also create a whole lot less of flexibility when it comes to work life. Right now, most companies offer workers some paid time off. Not all workplaces offer a bucket that's specifically for family leave, but they often allow people, their workers, to use their vacation time, their sick time, their personal days, and use that for maternity leave. And a growing number actually are providing specific parental leave. But also, again, to use my own organization as an example, often people have different, want different things. There's some women who want to take off 6 weeks or take off 12 weeks and then come back full time. But they also, sometimes women also decide, I'd rather, I can, my husband can be home, so I want to start working part time. I'd like to work from home for a few hours. I can start filling in with certain duties. There's this whole, especially in the modern era, for many, many jobs now, there's a whole array. It's no longer black and white, whether you're working or not. There's this whole gray middle, and it's pretty wonderful. It gives you a lot more control over how you want to schedule your life and how you want to design that. Well, once the federal government comes in and says, nope, here you go. You get 8 weeks off. It's at two-thirds pay. It wouldn't be full pay, two-thirds pay. You need to take it like this. The employer is not allowed to call you during that time. And then when they come back, the employers are going to say, okay, here we go. This is our one-size-fits-all solution. This is the benefit package you're going to receive. Many employers will find that that the benefit packages they had been offering was more generous than the federal program, but they're not going to continue offering that and have their people eligible for and paying for this federal program. So you're going to all move towards this one-size-fits-all program, which is really going to leave women and men with less flexibility and less control to design a situation that really works for their unique circumstances.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that people don't see the two sides. They just see what's purported to be a very positive step, and as you said earlier, all well intended, that may indeed be the case, but there are certainly ramifications. I want to take a quick pause, let folks know that they're tuned to 90.5 WICN. Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voney, your host. My guest this week is Carrie Lucas, the president of the Independent Women's Forum. And believe it or not, Carrie and her organization see a lot of pitfalls in too big a government sponsoring programs that are intended to help women, when indeed many of these so-called programs, well-intended programs, have negative ramifications. Carrie, I gotta ask you this question because it's as soon as this topic came across my desk, I said, here we go again. This is really motivated by politicians across the country at the federal level, at the state level, who want to pander to their constituents to get votes, so they'll put anything forth and push for its passage so that they look like they're doing good, but in reality, they just want to be reelected. Is that too harsh?
Well, I'm sure that there's some out there who really sincerely believe that this is the best path forward. But certainly the women's votes are an incredibly attractive and a big focus of just about every candidate out there. So politics certainly it has a big role to play in this. I think the good news is saying that a lot of these government programs backfire doesn't then mean that the our only option is for government to do nothing, because there are ways to help folks. One of the proposals that the Independent Women's Forum came out with about a year ago was this idea of allowing somebody who's focused specifically on new moms and dads, allowing them to elect, again, this is an option, it wouldn't be a requirement, to take some of their Social Security benefits at the time of the birth of a child or the adoption of a child instead of, but in exchange for delaying their Social Security eligibility enough to make up for those costs. So basically you're saying, I'm going to work a couple extra months at 67 in exchange for getting to take 2 months of Social Security benefits when I'm 30 and really need some help because I have a new baby. I think that's a really that would be an incredibly important step forward. It wouldn't displace all of the other benefit arrangements that employers have, and it could help people who really need it, because obviously there are folks out there who I wish we could help. I wish there was a government solution that could help the low-income mom who's working as hard as she can and has to have a C-section and doesn't have paid time off.
Right.
I don't want her going back to work right away.
Right.
So we can do better.
Yeah, and that's actually a novel idea. I never thought of that myself, because most people, for the most part, have accrued some savings in their Social Security. So why not? In other words, give them a reprieve to take it early, and then you have an opportunity to down the road when you get back on track to work, to pay back in. It makes perfect sense. That's why I always think that there's a knee-jerk reaction sometimes when there's a need arises. And as you said, the women's vote, the women's voice in this country today is more powerful today than at any other time that I can remember. So I get a little frustrated that, the political machines, whether it's at the local, state or federal level, sometimes with good intentions, move too quickly. And as you said, create programs that in the long run will cost every one of us more money. If you're a manufacturer, or if you create a product, of course the manufacturer or the company is going to pass it on in higher costs. If you're a service organization, of course your services are going to cost more down the road. But that's always seems to be a constant. Nobody's looking at the total picture. That's why I'm wondering, how often do you guys at the Independent Women's Forum get an opportunity to put forth some of your ideas, something that you've worked through, you've basically worked out all the bugs, and you've brought it before a government body? Do you get the opportunity to do that?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, the thing that was really exciting is I think that on the on this paid leave issue, I really think this debate has shifted remarkably over the last couple of years. You know, President Trump had spoken quite a bit about it during the 2016 campaign, and he really kind of broke the mold in terms of being a Republican who was saying, hey, government needs to do something. But then the question was what? The White House has been looking at a whole bunch of different approaches, recognizing, I think, very cognizant of the pitfalls of things like creating a new entitlement program and a new payroll tax. So they have been encouraging a conversation about different ways to try to help people without growing government. So the legislation or this idea that we came up with on using Social Security as a vehicle, that's been turned into legislation that has been introduced by Senator Rubio and Senator Romney, as well as Senators Lee and Ernst have a bill based on that.
Another thing that came up in the report,
so there's a lot of potential that this really could be a direction that we end up taking.
Yeah, I mean, it almost makes it sound like, Jesus, take a step back, take a breather, and look what you've already put forth, work out the bugs, there always seems to be a rush to judgment, get it out there. It'll quell it'll quell the uproar, if you will, and that doesn't always make good sense. Another thing that was striking in your report is that single moms under the age of 40 are very, very loyal, especially to Democrats, especially left leaning Democrats. So with that said, obviously, is that part of the Democratic Party? Are they particularly targeting single moms under 40, knowing that they're probably the most vulnerable? So let's put programs in tailored for them specifically. Is that just being a little too narrow?
No, I think that's absolutely the case. So, you know, the Democrats have long had a kind of have really dominated the conversation. That's partially, I think, a media problem. I think that so much of the media kind of just shapes the narrative, or they dominate the women's magazines that are often reaching this audience. But I think that, you know, I think that there's the potential for a lot of women to see. I think that the economy and the change in our economics, with the not only with the historically low unemployment rates, but also finally after a decade, we finally have rising wages. We have benefits improving. You now do see major companies who are now offering paid time off and other benefits to hourly workers as well as full-time workers. So we really are kind of having steps in the right direction. And I'm hopeful that there's some folks out there, including a lot of women, younger women out there, who recognize or starting to connect the dots and say, gosh, you know, maybe this is because of tax cuts and because of some of the rollback of the red tape. Maybe I'm better to take care of myself than having the government come in and try to mandate it. You know, it's interesting, I think, especially with the growing number of women who are engaged in some kind of entrepreneurial activity, or starting small businesses, or, you know, using Etsy to sell their stuff, you know, taking advantage of things like Uber and Lyft, the opportunity to work on hours they want to. I think that they recognize that these are opportunities that the market is creating. If government comes in, they can only mess this up, you know?
Yeah.
And so I do think that hopefully there could be some progress.
I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people, they look at the European models, and they have their pluses and they have their minuses there. And I'm not going to get into what's happening in Europe or the European Union. That's a whole different topic. But here in this country, this is a market economy, and entrepreneurship has been the backbone of this country. And I think you're right. I think the fact that so it took technology, the advancement of technology, to create these new ways in which like you said, a single mom under 40 with a newborn has an opportunity where she doesn't have to leave the baby. She can do it from home. There's more flexibility than ever before. And that's because we don't put, or at least we're not putting a lot of shackles on a free economy. But don't you get the sense that there's There's a movement afoot, or at least there's rumblings that we really need to take a step back and change everything that we've stood for all these years, for over 100 years. That makes me angry. It may not be perfect, but a free economy in the long run does create opportunities, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's disturbing how that there are, it does seem like there's a lot of folks who've started to take for granted this idea of the kind of opportunity and the ability to grow, the freedoms that this country offers, that people are just kind of, assume that this is, we can do anything we want, we can change the laws, that the Constitution, we can kind of just knock it over and not pay any mind to the consequences. And when reality, we see around the world, there are a lot. Nothing is guaranteed. We can't take for granted this idea that America will remain the most vibrant economy. One of economic growth and freedom, and where new inventions and creativity, really, we are ground zero for most of the positive economic development and kind of progress in the world. Well, that it doesn't have to be like that. You look at what's happening in Hong Kong. You see what's happened to Venezuela, which is now becoming a third world country again.
Right.
Progress. I don't know that President Obama had it right when he says the arc of history always bends towards justice or towards freedom. The arc of history can be turned. We need to make sure that it doesn't go in the wrong direction.
I heard a gentleman say just recently to me that he has a tremendous disdain for capitalism. And I said, but you're a corporate executive. You live in a nice neighborhood. Your kids go to a Tony school. You have a Mercedes. Do you think you'd be able to attain all of that living anywhere else in the world? This country, good and bad, this country has been very good to you. And he took offense at that. And I thought, I think people take for granted, as you were just talking about, the initiatives that people have in this country are so much greater depending on where you are. But you have to, let's call it what it is. And I want to get your sense on this. You have to be willing to, put on the boots in the morning and get out there and do something for yourself as well. I mean, if you're just sitting home going, well, poor me, I've had a disadvantaged life, so government owes me. I have trouble with that.
Oh, absolutely. I do think that, we need to, one of the great things about America has been the work ethic and this idea that, that Americans are, you're not promised anything except for the opportunity to use your time and talents to make the best of to pursue your own vision of happiness. But we can't lose that mentality. That is the American dream. It's not to have government come in and give you a living wage or provide subsistence for you. We do need to make sure that people remember that. And that's not being a scold. That's not just trying to be, bashing on people. It's really, this is a real part of life, and I think it's really denying people the opportunity to have a flourishing life if we create a system that doesn't reward work or encourage engagement. Because that's a lot of loneliness and unhappiness. Yeah. If you are just sitting around.
I mean, you've heard the term yourself, a welfare state, I don't know about you. I mean, I get shivers up my spine when I just hear that term, because it makes it sound like, oh my God, do they want the vast majority of Americans to be dependent on government for their sustenance? That's crazy. In the final few moments that we have, the boomers are moving on. We're going to see more and more millennials elected, both at the local, state, and federal level. Does this new generation have a mindset, as you were talking about, to let people be as independent as possible, or will the next generation of legislators pack on more of this so-called big government and big government bailouts?
Yeah, I think that may be one of the hardest questions to answer that I've heard, because I don't want to be pessimistic, and I do think that the roots of our country are strong enough, and I think that when people are given more positions of power, they're going to be recognized like the great responsibility and kind of the more of those fundamentals. So I hope as kind of the next generation grows up a little bit and starts paying the bills and has children of their own that they're trying to kind of advance in life, that they may become more steeped in that kind of the originalism of America and the limits of government and the power of freedom and opportunity. But it's concerning because I do think this generation, you know, I'm Generation X, and I think that, you know, we're one of the last generation that still had a healthy dose of history,
right?
And did have kind of a basic appreciation for what made America special. But I don't know that this generation has been encouraged to see it as such or to recognize that the things we have and take for granted are things that are incredibly vulnerable and are not at all guaranteed unless we stay committed to guaranteeing them.
I think that's great advice. I think, you know, as you said, I hope that they, as they come into their own, buying homes, getting, you know, settled down, getting married, have children, you realize that, you know, government is not going to be there 24/7 to give you the lifestyle that you have become accustomed to. It takes being a bootstrapper and pulling yourself up. I want to thank my guest this week, Carrie Lucas, the president of the Independent Women's Forum, for her insightfulness. The issue has been how big government hurts women, and you know, with all good intentions, the fact of the matter is that we want all of our workers, all of our citizens here to be as independent as possible, and big government programs aren't always the best way of doing that. Carrie, real quick, if people want to get more information about not only this topic but other things that you folks are working on, is there a website or an email?
Yes, please come visit us at IWF.org. That's Independent Women's Forum. You can see a short PragerU video that I just put out on this topic. And there's a whole lot of information on there where we firmly believe all issues are women's issues. I think you'll find something you like.
Great. And if there's any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.